In chapter 1 of Nectar Devotion, the six characteristics of pure devotional service, or Uttam Bhakti, as it's said in Sanskrit. Then we discussed two, Kleshagni and Shubhada. Now we're discussing Moksha, Lagutakrit, and Sidurlava, which are two qualities that come at the platform of Bhava Bhakti. So this Moksha Lagutakrit means one who considers that moksha is very light. He takes it lightly. He doesn't take it very seriously. Moksha, that doesn't matter. Mama janmani, janmani, janmani. Bhavatad bhakti rahoite pitai. And let me take birth after birth. What do I care? Na dhanam, na janam, na sundaram, na moksha. It doesn't matter. Let me serve Krishna. That's all I want. So it says, Bhava bhakti derides the happiness of liberation. So this is the third characteristic of Uttam Bhakti, or as Prabhupada says, pure devotional service is manifested at the stage of Bhava. So the fourth quality is Sudurlava. Sudurlava, love means to attain. When we say lobha, kam, krodha, lobha, lobha means greed or desire for gain. So lobha, love, labhya means to attain. So dur means difficult, and su means very. So it's very difficult to attain this Bhava Bhakti. So this Sudurlava is very difficult to achieve. This Bhava Bhakti is not attained by any process of self-realization, even after executing some sadhana for thousands of years. So Sati, Shiva speaks to Sati. There's one reference that Rupa Goswami gives on page 14 of Nectar Devotion. Very nice quote. He explains how it's difficult. As we say, it's Sudurlava, means it's very difficult to achieve Bhava Bhakti. So this is the first difficulty that Lord Shiva is mentioning. This verse to Sati. My dear Sati, if one is a very fine philosopher, analyzing the different processes of knowledge, he can achieve liberation from the material entanglement. By performance of the ritualistic sacrifices mentioned in the Vedas, one can be elevated to the platform of pious activities and thereby enjoy the material comforts of life to the fullest extent. But all such endeavors can hardly offer anyone Bhava Bhakti to the Lord. Not even if one tries for it by such processes for many thousands and thousands of years. So what Lord Shiva is telling Sati and to all of us is that we cannot achieve Bhava Bhakti or pure devotional service by our own efforts. Only if Krishna gives it to us. And Krishna is very reluctant to give this Bhava Bhakti. Why is he reluctant? Why does he hesitate to give Bhava Bhakti? Because he becomes controlled by it. It's like someone may be hesitant to give out their ATM card. so someone can take their ATM card and go to the bank and take out so much money. So they have to give that card to a very trusted friend that won't draw out all their money. So Krishna's ATM card is Bhava Bhakti and Prema Bhakti. So when he gives that to a conditioned soul, or not to a conditioned soul, but to a devotee, an advanced devotee, then they can withdraw so much love from Krishna's heart. They can withdraw so much love from the account of Krishna that he becomes controlled by them. So one would be very hesitant about giving control over himself to another. That is a very the nearest and dearest thing to us is our very selves. So if we give that to someone else, here, you take me. Take the very essence of me, myself, and you can do whatever you like with it. So we might be a little fearful and hesitant to give ourselves to just anyone. We must be very highly qualified and trustworthy and loving and surrendered person to attract us so much that we're willing to give ourselves to. So that's why it's very rare, because it only comes from Krishna. You can't attain it by your own efforts. As it says, you can't achieve pure devotional service by our own efforts. Only Krishna can give it. Prolonged practice of sadhana bhakti does not give bhava bhakti. Unless, in other words, if we practice for a long time sadhana bhakti, but we don't practice with attachment, which is known as asakti, which becomes vajana kriya, then there's nishta, ruchi, asakti, then bhava. So this bhava comes when one practices devotional service with an intense mood of attachment, that Krishna is mine, that I belong to Krishna, mamata, and Krishna is mine, and I have nothing else but that. So the reason that this attachment attracts the attention of Krishna, because asakti, at the level of asakti, at the level of asakti, one possesses a sincerity and an emotional intensity that attracts Krishna's favor. So when we advance in bhakti, we come to a point where we're extremely attached to Krishna, and we're very, very sincere, and we have emotions. Maybe we cry when we chant Hare Krishna, we cry when we think of Krishna, because our heart is genuinely melted. It is not a sentimental display like some soft-hearted woman who can cry over the loss of her dog, or the loss of her pocketbook, or the loss of her hairspray or cell phone or anything. She can cry. Because women are soft-hearted and they easily cry. I mean the actual melting of the heart, when the devotee's heart actually melts due to his feelings for God, and due to his genuine and real attachment to the Lord, his heart melts. So then when he chants the holy name, he cries, because his genuine feelings are there. The heart is softened. It's not that he's saying, oh, Krishna. You can't fake the crying. You can make pretend crying, but that's not real crying. So bhakti, our sadhana bhakti must be practiced with this deep mood of attachment and sincere feelings. Prabhupada always tried to encourage us to practice bhakti with feelings, not get absorbed in the mechanics of it. Of course, there are mechanical considerations in the chanting of Hare Krishna mantra. Prabhupada said when one is chanting japa, he must engage the upper and lower lips, upper and lower lip, and also the tongue. So these are physical considerations. The movements, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, 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 Hare. The upper lips and lower lips, but most importantly, one must engage the mind and heart, because they're much more near to our soul than the senses. So our heart must be actually feeling for the holy name, and our mind must be deeply considering the significance and the meaning of the holy name, along with the physical application of our senses, moving the tongue and moving the lips, and distinctly and clearly repeating and vibrating each syllable of the 16 word mantra, 32 syllables and 16 words. So this is Siddhartha. It's very rarely attained. So we say it's very difficult to attain. So the first difficulty is that you can do so many things, but you can't attain on your own. And the second difficulty is mentioned here. The second difficulty is that Krishna is reluctant to give uttam bhakti, because he gives in his very self that, and that when he does that. So that's why it's very rare. It's rare that Krishna is going to give himself to anyone. And it's rare that a devotee can develop that degree of attachment, asakti, to the Lord, by which he can rise to this platform of bhava. Now we have this this Sanjayananda Visheshatma, incalculably condensed bliss, unlimited, unfathomable, uncountable, condensed, concentrated bliss. It's so much concentrated, it comes to the point of an impenetrability. So these last two characteristics of pure devotional service, Sandrananda Visheshatma and Sri Krishna Karshani, these are qualities that manifest at the level of Prema Bhakti, which is a very, very advanced stage. We may not see the stage of Krishna consciousness for several lifetimes, but nevertheless, we can hear about it. The happiness, Prabhupada translates Sandrananda Visheshatma as a happiness. It's on page 14. Oh, the happiness of becoming one with the Supreme. And then that's how he talks about the happiness. But the actual words, Sandrananda Visheshatma, which I think I was mentioning the other day, how it was the cream of delight, remember? It's the essence of the cream of delight. Visheshatma means it's something very special. Vishesh, very special. So it's a very special form of highly concentrated and condensed bliss, ananda. That's a literal meaning. And then here Prabhupada translates that term on page 15 by saying, the happiness of becoming one with the Lord. So this incalculably condensed bliss manifests at the stage of prema. The happiness of prema bhakti is so densely concentrated that nothing can penetrate it. No other perception or thought can even momentarily register in the mind of a devotee who has attained prema bhakti for Radha and Krishna. Can you imagine? Now there's millions and millions of thoughts bombarding us from moment to moment, minute to minute. This thought and that thought, and this idea and that idea. And they're just penetrating our consciousness one after the other in a continual volley of machine gun fire. Like that. But it says here that this Chandrananda, this not just Ananda, Visheshananda, Ananda Vishesh. So Prabhupada translates this Chandrananda, condensed bliss, as happiness of becoming one with the Supreme. Rupa Goswami says that Brahmananda, the happiness of becoming one with the Supreme, is multiplied 1 trillion fold. It cannot compare to an atomic fraction of the happiness derived from the ocean of devotional service. So the Swarupananda of realizing your eternal spiritual form and awakening your eternal loving relationship with Krishna, beginning to serve Krishna in that loving relationship, and meditation in preparation for final entrance into the spiritual domain, produces such a happiness that it makes the happiness of Kaivalya Mukti, or merging in Brahman, which is the ultimate goal of the Brahmavadis or Mayavadis, it makes their happiness seem like it's nothing. But the happiness of Swarupananda or Chandrananda Visheshatma, this highly concentrated, condensed bliss that the bhakta feels in his devotion to the Lord, yet it's trillions of times more satisfying and fulfilling and generating happiness than this Brahmananda. No other perception or thought can even momentarily register in a devotee's mind who has attained this state of praying. Krishna, 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 Hari. Only Krishna, nothing else. So it's... Now, Prahlad Maharaj, he's a devotee of Vishnu, and he's considered to be Prahlad Maharaj, in terms of rasa, he's considered that he was on the platform of Shanta Ras. He never really engaged in any direct personal or active service to the Lord, but he did engage in meditation on the Lord. He was always doing smaranam, Vishnu smaranam. He was always remembering Vishnu. When his father gave him poison, and then Kaushipu gave him poison, enough poison to kill 100 men, and Prahlad Maharaj was thinking, oh, Vishnu, Vishnu, Sri Vishnu, Sri Vishnu, Sri Vishnu. And by the purity of his consciousness, the consciousness of Prahlad Maharaj transformed that poison into prasad. It became nectar. Vish means poison and Amrit means nectar. Vish kills one and Amrit makes one immortal. Amrita, Amrityu, without death. Mrityu means death and Amrit, and Amrityu means without death. So something that prevents death or forestalls death or increases life is called Amrit. Soma, Soma Ras is called Amrit. Cow's milk is also called Amrit in Ayurvedic Shastras, because a daily drinking of cow's milk will prolong life and give great happiness to life. So therefore cow's milk is called an Amrit. So Prahlad Maharaj, he was always remembering the Lord, and so he's considered, he's a Shuddha Bhakta. He was exhibiting pure bhakti, not Karma Mishra Bhakti, not Gyan Mishra Bhakti, not Arupa Siddha Bhakti or Sangha Siddha Bhakti or any kind of Sakama Bhakti. His bhakti was pure, Kevala Bhakti, Shuddha Bhakti, but it was only developed to the point of Shantaras. Now a higher devotee than Prahlad, a more advanced devotee in terms of devotion and more intimate relationship with the Lord, so you can say a bigger bhakta than Prahlad, is Hanuman. Hanuman was in Dasya Bhakti, Dasya Rati. He is considered to be the Dasya Rati Prakash. He's a manifestation of Dasya Rati. Servant, he's serving. He is actively, personally, and directly, and intimately serving Lord Ramachandra. As his carrier, as his parasol, he holds an umbrella over his head. He fans the Lord. He carries messages for the Lord. He carries the Lord himself on his back. He renders various personal services. We don't see any account in the Shastras of Prahlad Maharaj rendering any personal services. These same points are brought out in Brihad Bhagavatamrita by Sanatana Goswami. So this Prahlad Maharaj is talking about the happiness of bhakti. What kind of bhakti? Shanta bhakti. Not even the happiness of Dasya bhakti or Sakya bhakti. I want to speak of Madhurya bhakti. He's telling Lord Nisringadev, my dear Lord Nisringadev, I am feeling transcendental pleasure in your presence, and I have become merged in the ocean of happiness, Sukhasagar. Sukhasagar Nimajantam. I now consider the happiness of Brahmananda to be no better than the water in the impression left by a cow's hoof in the earth, as compared to this unlimited ocean of bliss, transcendental bliss, ananda. So there's Brahmananda and there's Bhaktiananda, or Premananda, or Sarupananda. In Bhavartha Deepika, which is the name of Sridhar Swami's commentary on the Bhagavatam, he says, my dear Lord, some of the fortunate persons who are swimming in the ocean of your nectar of devotion and who are relishing the nectar of the narration of your pastimes certainly know ecstasies which immediately minimize the value of the happiness derived from dharma, artha, kama, and moksha. Religiousness, economic development, sense gratification, and liberation. Such a transcendental devotee regards any kind of happiness other than devotional service as no better than a straw in the street. So compared to Bhakti Anand or Sevanand, any other kind of happiness is completely and totally insignificant. Even the happiness of Brahman is trifling. So this is the fifth characteristic of pure devotional service, Uttambhati, is that it brings one to the stage of Chandrananda Visheshatma. One experiences a very special type of concentrated bliss. And the last quality is Sri Krishna Karshani. Prabhupada simply writes, attracting Krishna. The sixth characteristic is attracting Krishna. Karshan means to attract, Sankarshan. Sri Krishna Karshani. Bhakti attracts pure bhakti, Uttam bhakti, Prema bhakti. This type of bhakti attracts Krishna. This is when one gets darshan of Krishna. At the level of bhav sometimes, it gets some darshan, and certainly at the level of prema, it is darshan. Prema bhakti is so powerful that it attracts and controls the all-attractive Supreme Controller, Lord Sri Krishna. We are controlled by our material attachments. We become attached to that which gives us pleasure. Only self-satisfied people, who are they? The Aptakamis and Atmaramis. Only self-satisfied people remain detached and independent. Krishna is self-satisfied, Atmaram. Yet, he is attracted by his internal potency, Ladini Shakti. Thus, Krishna becomes attracted and controlled by his Ladini Shakti. The essence of Ladini Shakti is love, Krishna Prem. Therefore, one who has Prem, if you actually have Prem, it means that Ladini Shakti has manifested within us and has taken up residence within our heart. If one has prema, he can attract and control the Lord. In his commentary on this verse, there's actually a verse which describes these six characteristics. Sri Krishna Karshani. Shiva Goswami, on the order of Rupa Goswami, he gave commentary to all the different shlokas in Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, Nectar of Devotion. In this particular shloka, he comments on this word, Sri Krishna Karshani. He says, Jiva Goswami, the word Sri refers to the entourage of Lord Krishna. Entourage means the associates. It refers to the entourage of Lord Krishna. They become charmed into submission by Prema Bhakti. So therefore, the object of bhakti is not only Krishna, but also his entourage, like Radharani. So it's interesting that, Jiva Goswami, he says, Sri Krishna, I could just say that the sixth characteristic of pure devotional service is Krishna Karshani. Karshani attracts Krishna. That pure bhakti, prema bhakti, attracts Krishna, and moreover, not only attracts him, but controls him. He becomes controlled by it. But Rupa Goswami, he chooses his words very particularly. He says, Sri Krishna. So generally, when you see any books, when they write the name Krishna, because Krishna, their idea is that Krishna is never alone. Krishna is always with Radharani, or with Balaram, or his mother Yashoda, Yashoda Krishna, Yashoda Nandan, Nanda Nandan, and Krishna Balaram. So they never write Krishna this, Krishna that, or Lord Krishna. They always write Sri Krishna. And the reason they do that, because their tattva behind it is that Sri represents Radharani. She is the original beautiful goddess of fortune. She's Ali Sri. Sri means goddess of fortune. So when they say, so the Supreme Lord Krishna said, so they say the Supreme Lord Sri Krishna said, because Sri represents Radharani. So Jiva Goswami is saying this word Sri in this term, Sri Krishna Karshani, refers to Krishna and his entourage, His entourage means his associates. So Sri Krishna, the Sri, the word Sri refers to Radharani, Lalita, Yashoda, Nanda, Sudam, Subal, Sridam, Krishna, Balaram, and Raptak, Patrak, Rohini, Ambika, Kalinda, all the different associates that are in the family and are the intimate associates of Krishna in the various rasas. So Jiva Goswami in his commentary gives the indication that Sri refers to the entourage or the associates of Krishna, and that when we render prema bhakti, and when we come to the platform of prema bhakti and practicing prema bhakti and practicing devotion filled with prema, then not only do we attract Krishna, but we attract his associates also. This is the point Jiva is making. Rupa says that prema bhakti attracts Krishna, right? This is one of the six characteristics. And Jiva says, not only does it attract Krishna, but because Rupa used the term Sri Krishna, it attracts Krishna, yes, Krishna Karshani, but also Sri Karshani. So it also attracts the entourage of Krishna, the associates of Krishna. And they also become charmed into submission, which means, that term, charmed into submission, means that we come to the platform of prema bhakti, then we attract Krishna, and we also control him by our love. But not only do we attract Krishna, but we attract Krishna's associates. We attract Radharani, Lalita, Vishakha, Rupavati, Manjari, Sridham, Subal. And not only do we attract them, but they also become controlled by us. They also submit to us. This is the point Jiva's making. So this is not in the original Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. This is the commentary of Jiva Goswami. Now, in our summary study of Nectar Devotion by Srila Prabhupada, it's interesting that when he's discussing this term, the six characteristics, Sri Krishna Karshani, he immediately brings out the point of Radharani. Jiva Goswami, in his commentary, which Prabhupada obviously was reading, says that Sri means the entourage, the associates, the collective associates of Krishna. Now, Srila Prabhupada took that one step further, because Prabhupada is a pure devotee of Radharani. He's also a Sakya Manjari, Nitya Manjari. And from his birth and childhood, his father was feeding four sadhus every day, lunchtime, it's told in Lilamrita. And every day he was praying to those four sadhus, please bless my son that he will become a pure devotee of Radharani. So Prabhupada doesn't need anyone's blessings or anybody's ashirvad to become a pure devotee of Radharani, because he always was and always is a pure devotee of Radharani. He has descended from the spiritual world, from the inner circle of Radharani Sakya Manjaris. And so it was just kind of a play on words, where his father was saying, oh, please bless my son. The son was actually blessing them by giving all those sadhus his darshan. Because all those sadhus, or swadhus, oftentimes nowadays they say there are no real sadhus, everyone's actually a swadhu. Srila Prabhupada, he immediately, when he sees this word Sri Krishna Karshani, that prema bhakti attracts Krishna and controls Krishna, prema bhakti attracts Krishna's associates, immediately, without any further ado, Prabhupada starts saying, yes, prema attracts Radharani. It's a very sweet little secret Prabhupada is letting out here in his purport, because in the page 15 of the Nectar of Devotion, under this category of Sri Krishna Karshani, which Prabhupada translates as attracting Krishna, he says, Rupa Goswami has stated that Uttam Bhakti, Prem Bhakti, attracts even Krishna. Krishna attracts everyone, but devotional service attracts Krishna. The symbol of devotional service in the highest degree is Radharani. She's the symbol of the highest degree of devotional service, because she is Mahabhav Sarupini. Krishna is called Madan Mohan, which means he's so attractive he can defeat the attraction of thousands of madans, cupids. But Radharani is still more attractive, for she can even attract Krishna. Therefore, devotees call Radharani Madan Mohan Mohini, the attractor of the attractor of Cupid. So this is very nice that Prabhupada takes this word. This is Prabhupada's Tika, expanding the verse of Rupa Goswami, Sri Krishna Karshani, and taking Jiva Goswami's indication. Prabhupada is beating a kettle drum to announce the glorious announce the glories of Radharani and her pure bhakti. And now he goes further. He's on a roll, as they say. Prabhupada's on a roll. He's on to Radharani now. He's not going to let her go. So in these two paragraphs, Prabhupada is extremely relishing, is presenting very sweet glories of Radharani. In continuation of discussing of this term, Sri Krishna Karshani. To perform devotional service means, what does it mean to practice bhakti? To perform bhakti yoga, or especially prema bhakti. To perform devotional service, especially prema bhakti, means to follow in the footsteps of Radharani. And devotees in Vrindavan put themselves under the care of Radharani in order to achieve perfection in their devotional service. In other words, devotional service is not an activity of the material world. It is directly under the control of Radharani. In the Bhagavad Gita, it is confirmed that the Mahatmas are great souls, are under the protection of the Daivi Prakriti, internal energy, which is Radharani. What's that verse? Seventh chapter of Gita, verse 14. Mahatmanas tumam part, or maybe it's 9:14. Mahatmanas tumam parta daivim prakritam ashrita vajanti nanyi manasa gyapa vatanam avayam. Something like this. This daivi prakritam ashrita ashraya. Ashraya, guru parashraya. This is the first limb of bhakti, guru parashraya. So the Mahatmas, the great souls, they put themselves under the lotus feet of Radharani. Daivi prakriti ashraya. They take shelter of the internal energy. So, being directly under the control of the internal potency of Krishna, devotional service, attracts even Krishna himself. So this is a very nice revelation. Prabhupada is bringing out the sweet position of Srimati Radharani. So this concludes chapter 1, the characteristics of pure devotional service. Now we'll begin chapter 2, which is the first stages of devotion, or the first, which means sadhana bhakti. Starts to discuss sadhana bhakti. Basic introduction to sadhana bhakti. Is there any questions?
It's told in that when a devotee advances to the platform of prema, prema has different divisions. Prema is the beginning. There are seven levels of prema. There's sneha, man, pranaya, rag, anurag, bhav, and mahabhav. These are the levels of prema. But all of these different degrees of prema, I can only be experienced in the Vastu city, in the pure spiritual body, because the intensity of the ecstasies that they generate and the flavors of rasa that they produce cannot be experienced in the material body and cannot be experienced or understood in the material body. This is what is told by the saints and the shastras. So when one is advancing from sadhana bhakti to bhava bhakti to prema bhakti, he, at the level of prema bhakti, then even at the level of prema bhakti, he feels so much viraha, so much separation from Radha and Krishna. Although he's meditating on them and trying to remember them and occasionally having a spurti or a limited vision of Radha and Krishna and their aprakrita lila, when he loses that vision or that spurti, then he again comes into this material consciousness. His deep meditation breaks, like in Vilapa Sumanjali by Raghunath Das Goswami. And then he laments, Vilapa Sumanjali, a handful of flowers, a bouquet of lamentation, Vilap. So then he cries in separation, oh, where are you, Krishna? Where are you, Radharani? And he's rolling on the ground and crying. So prema is an extremely intense experience for the sadhaka. And feeling compassionate for the devotee, the Lord will free him from his material tabernacle. Now, although he has that devotee as a sadhaka, he has finally attained perfection in terms of arriving at the platform of prema. He's come to the threshold of prema, realized his sarup, and he's engaged in manasi seva, serving the Lord's astakali lila according to the directions of his guru in his particular sthayi bhav, permanent devotional mellow. But he does not know how to exchange with Radha and Krishna and these higher levels of prema, because these higher levels of prema cannot be experienced or felt or registered in this material body. So therefore he has to again take a birth where Krishna's actual leelas are going on, prakat leela, and in that body, which is when it first manifests as its swarup, but then it kind of, you can say, grows or develops full vastu nature, then he meets the associates of the Lord directly. He meets the Lita Mishaka, Rupanrati, Anangamantri, and then they give him further training in the experiences and the exchanges on the level of sneha, man, pranaya, how to do man, and all these other higher intense experiences of prema that are not possible to be understood or to be felt or to be experienced in the material body at the platform of Swarup Siddhi in the material world, in the plane of prema bhakti. So that's why it necessitates another birth. One must take another birth in the prakat lila of the Lord and get further training in these higher nuances and levels of prema. Because this material body cannot bear the intensity of emotions and that are experienced in these prakriti dehas. A prakriti deha means a spiritual body that can contain these intense experiences of the higher levels of prema. So generally, I mean, always it is that all devotees give up their bodies at the platform of prema and take another body in Brahma Vrindavan. Because you cannot enter into the spiritual world of Goloka Vrindavan, because when you get there you won't have any familiarity. You won't know how to relate. Because you have no experience or training in the fine ways of intimately and directly associating with Radha and Krishna. There's quite a big difference between one's meditation and manasi seva than the actual direct service of Radha and Krishna in the aprakriti deha. It's an approximation what one does in meditation, manasi seva. It's something like this. Radha and Krishna are there and doing service, but I'm not in my spiritual body yet. My spiritual body, it's a reflection. It's sarup. It's my sarup, a mandri sarup. But it is not that fully developed vastu siddhi. Vastu means pure substance. It is not purely chit deha, because it's still material. We're still in this body. We're passing stool with so many things. So we have to experience these spiritual feelings, these totally spiritual feelings, higher feelings of prema, sneha, man, pranaya, rag, anurag, bhav, mahabhav. One requires a prakriti deha, a totally spiritual body, not a spiritualized body, not a material body. We're in a material body and we realize our sarup. It's a partial realization. It's not complete, because complete means all these seven levels of prema, but you cannot realize those seven levels of prema. It is impossible to realize those seven levels of prema and impossible to experience those seven levels of prema in this material body. So sarup siddhi, in Swarup Siddhi, you're meditating on your spiritual body, but it has not been realized, because you cannot realize that spiritual body fully and all the seven levels of prema in this material body, because the material body is limited, because it's material. This is why that everywhere is told that one must take one more birth, and so many more births till we attain prema, and then when we attain prema siddhi, then Swarup Siddhi, then we go to Prakat Lila, then we attain Vastu Siddhi, and then in that self same body we enter into the, we don't take a birth, and we don't take a birth again in the spiritual world. We just leave this world, Krishna's pastimes, and then immediately we're in that world, and right, just continuing no birth and growing up or anything like that. It's not. It's like a lotus flower is in the water, but it's not wet. So it's the Krishna's pastimes in the material world. It's called Boma. Boma means bhumi. Bhumi means earth. So Krishna's planet pastimes in the earth planet are called Boma Lila. And they go from universe to another universe to another universe. So you must go to the wherever those pastimes are manifest, you must enter there, you must take birth there. You know, born, just like you're born, birth, you must take birth. And then you must meet the associates and get training in your particular seva, and also in developing the proper moods and mellows, which are totally spiritual, that you cannot perceive or understand in the material body. Yeah, it's not. It's just like when Krishna was born from Vasudeva and Devaki. It's not a material body. It appears to be a birth. Avijñāti mām uddhāva manuṣyam tanum āśrita. Krishna says in Gita, fools think I've assumed a human form when I take birth. The term is saying taking birth. You come from the womb of a gopi, but you have your body is transcendental. Krishna came from the womb of Yashoda, but his body is transcendental. Similar, like that. Because it's not material, because that body that comes from the womb doesn't die. That body, and that in Prakat Lila, that is your eternal spiritual body. It's called Vastu. In the beginning it's Swarup, it's like Swarup's city, and then it gets fine-tuned, and then the full Vastu city manifests. It's like an 89% spiritual body. Then by associating with the eternal associates and getting trained, the specifics of bhava and your seva, then your full Vastu city manifests in the same lifetime. And in that Vastu city, you directly enter the spiritual world. No birth, no appearance of birth. It appears that Krishna, it's called Janmasthami, the birth of Krishna. But his birth and our birth are not the same. There's no inside and outside of his body. There's no bones. Krishna's body doesn't have bones and veins and nerves. And the gopis don't have veins and bones. It's a spiritual body. But the mechanisms, they take birth in a material world. But it's not a material world. It's also Bhoma Vrindavan. But that's a term that is used. They take birth from the womb of a gopi. Usually Sridaya comes through Guru. Guru is representing Krishna. When one is qualified, as Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati originally coined the term, and then Prabhupada repeated it, first deserve, then desire. So when one is deserving to realize his sarup, then Krishna arranges for it to happen by Shiksha Guru or Diksha Guru. If the Diksha Guru does not reveal the sarup, spiritual form of the disciple, then the disciple can receive that revelation from a suitable Shiksha Guru. And when the disciple practices bhakti, sadhana bhakti, and he comes to the level of bhava, at the level of bhava bhakti, he himself begins to get a revelation of the particular sthayi bhava that he is in. In other words, he gets some inclination, or say intimation of what his sarup is, Mandri sarup or Sakha sarup or Vatsalya sarup. And then in consultation with his Diksha Guru or advanced Shiksha Guru, he will say, I'm inclined to love the Lord in this way. It's becoming revealed to me. And then the Guru will confirm that or direct that or realign that. Say, yes, you should consider yourself a follower of Lalita and Vishakha. You should think of yourself as a mandiri. This, if you read Jiva Dharma, you'll see these things are explained. So the Guru gave, the Diksha Guru gave Vijay Kumar and Vajranath, he gave them the general outline of a meditation to think about once they each revealed their inclination. One disciple revealed that he was interested in Sakya Rasa, and the other disciple revealed that he was interested in Madhurya Rasa. So they were carrying on with that meditation. Then they asked their guru for further details. It's called Ekadash Bhav, the specific 11 symptoms of the individual Sarup: Nam, Vayas, Vesh, complexion, and age, and dress, and Vasa, residence, and Seva, and many things, 11 altogether. So then the Diksha Guru said, "You know, I'm not fully endowed with that understanding, but you should go to Gopal Guru Goswami. He is in Jagannath Puri. He can, as a Shiksha Guru, he can reveal these esoteric points to you." So then they went there with Guru's blessings, and then they took Shiksha, took instruction from Gopal Guru Goswami and his leading disciple Dhyan Chandra Goswami, who also wrote a book called Gaur Govinda Archana Smarana Padati, which is like a handbook for Raghunuga Bhakti and higher meditations in a Mandri Sarup Bhajan. So this is the way it works. That Krishna is adjusting everything and arranging everything according to our advancement. Because Krishna is the ever-present, all-knowing and all-loving Guru who's sitting with us at all times in the heart as Paramatma, Antaryami, Super Soul. So he's the Adi Guru, Chaitya Guru. Chaitya means living, Chaitana. Chaitya, like Chaitanya. He's a Chaitya Guru. There's Vartman Pradarshika Guru, then there's Shiksha Guru, Diksha Guru, and Chaitya Guru. So Chaitya Guru often manifests as the other three time to time. He manifests as a Vartman Pradarshika Guru, or Shiksha Guru, Diksha Guru. So Krishna is adjusting everything and arranging everything according to our sincerity and our eligibility, our adhikar. We get what we deserve. This is our faith. But there's no question of entering into the spiritual world until one has become anugata, rag anuga. He has to follow in the footsteps of specific residents of Vrindavan, like Rupa Manjari, serve externally like Rupa Goswami and internally like Rupa Manjari, and pray and develop the same similar feelings, and pray to do similar services, and develop the similar moods of exchange with Radharani, especially. That's as a sadhaka. And then that training, then he's praying, and then he's trying to follow externally and internally Rupa and Rati, and Rupa Manjari, and also Rati Manjari, Raghunath Das. And then when he attains siddhi, sort of siddhi, then he continues the training, but now he meets them personally. Like you may study the teachings, you may have books by a teacher. Like someone, for example, maybe they get my books. I've written some books, and there's some teachings and instructions in those books. So they buy my books, and they start studying. Oh, he says to chant like this, japa, and to do like this, and many things are there. So they start following all those things, my teachings. And then if they're very eager and enthusiastic and interested, they come to Vrindavan, to Radhakund, and say, "Oh, we want to study personally with you." They say, "Oh, I'll just take it." So then how much more they'll learn? You know, because they've surrendered and they have actually met me personally. So how many more secrets they can find? So the same way, when we enter the Boma Vrindavan Leela, Prakat Leela of the Lord, then we will meet our teacher directly. We will meet our Rupa Goswami and our Raghunath Das Goswami directly. And they will say, "Oh yes, you're my old student. You studied so many lifetimes my books, and you tried to follow my teachings very sincerely. So now, let me explain about the higher teachings of Sneha Man Pranaya, Rag Anurag." And because we can't understand these things in this material body. Until we have a pure spiritual body, we can understand we read about sneha and pranaya, what kind of intense love it is, but we have no way of registering it or feeling it or perceiving it. So the training continues. So if we're not even, we have no even sambandha or any connection with Rupa Goswami or Raghunath Das, and we're not sincerely following in their footsteps, there's no question of very quickly going back to the spiritual world with the speaker Bhava Vrindavan. Rupa Raghunatha Poide Havyakuti. When will I be eager to follow in the footsteps of Rupa and Raghunath?